C4. Number 19B.
Now, we come to the next chapter, the science of being, which in the matrix is at the point of Christianity as the Christ. Because it's at the point of Christianity, you see at once that that title, Science of Being, which in the textbook is all written in capital letters, fundamentally means science of being, being with a small b, and not with a capital B. If it would be the science of being, then it would have to tell us the science of the infinite one. If it has a small b, science of being with a small b, then it has to do with the science of ideas. So we have to be careful always when we write about the science of being. If we mean the science of being with a capital B, namely then when we show the science that rules within the capitalized terms. For instance, if we take the chart and show the science within the chart, then it's a science of being with a capital B. But if we are showing something about the universe, about creation, the ideational creation, then it is the science of being with a small b. This we have to keep in mind because the title has all capitalized terms, and so it doesn't show it right away. I said we come to the point of intersection of Christianity as the realm of ideas, intersecting with Christ. Christ is the manifestation of these ideas in spite of its opposite. And if I have said that, I have said the whole chapter. Though it is a very long chapter, I have said the main thing about it. Namely that here we would feel or see that ideas are dynamic, that they have a Christ, that ideas have within themselves the ability of the Christ, namely to resolve illusions. That the opposite of ideas, illusions, whatever kind of illusions they are, whatever kind of misconceptions they are, that the idea will destroy them, that these illusions will yield before the impact of ideas. I think this term yielding is rather appropriate here in this chapter. She would much more show how any false concept retraces and retraces under the impact of the incoming idea. That in the measure as the universe of idea is established in consciousness, the more the universe of illusion is retracting and falling back and yielding until finally it is always shown to be obsolete. So ideas have dynamic power. See, this is something that theology actually never quite acknowledges. They always are directed towards a God, to see what is God, what is God's relation to man, what is man's relation to God. See, they somehow stay with the world where man is related to God, and God is related to man in the Christ, God coming to man as the Christ. But very seldom one feels that they are really focusing on Christianity, namely on the fact that there is a universe of ideas and that ideas themselves reflect the Christ and therefore are a savior, that ideas save. And we can see on the basis, really on the chapter on creation where we have seen that we have the fatherhood of idea and the sonship of idea and the motherhood of idea, that on that basis, you see, we are the Christ. We can be the Christ to the illusion, which is then the 10th chapter, where illusions yield before our consciousness of the idea. Therefore, you can also see here something interesting. You see, Every higher teaching has its sunny side and its shadow side, its light and darkness. The moment we begin to teach that all that matters are ideas and all that is going on is principle and idea, the false deduction has been made, all right, let the idea do it. The idea do it. I don't have to do anything. Which is wrong. It is absolutely wrong. Which is saying, I'm not the idea. Let the idea do it, and I'm not the idea, is naturally wrong, you can see. See, it only goes as far as the Christ translation, which says, let God operate as its own idea, and let God through its idea do it. It cuts off that we should go on to Christianity, where we begin to see in the chapter on creation that we are that very idea, and that if we say, let the idea do it, it means our ideational consciousness. Therefore, we have to reflect that ideational consciousness, and you have it so wonderfully in Life, Truth, and Love in the chapter Creation, that we reflect the fatherhood of the idea, the sonship of the idea, the motherhood of idea. Then we can't have that feeling, let the idea do it, and think the idea is somewhere else than we. We are the idea. And then in the 10th chapter, naturally, then we see that our whole beingness of being idea is the Christ to every situation. It's that Christ which resolves latent error, latent beliefs. It's also the Christ that will destroy concrete error. And these are the two parts that the science of being wants to show. Actually, we know from the structure book that chapter has three parts. We leave out the third part, because it just doesn't seem to be, fitting into the flow now of what we want to do, namely to show the flow of the seven, because the third part gives the calculus of the 4x4. The first and second part we want to consider now, and what is the difference between the first and second part? The difference is, or let's first say, what is the common denominator? The common denominator is naturally the place value of the chapter, which says ideas are dynamic. That remains through all the three parts. In the first part, it shows that ideas are dynamic to resolve error. What kind of error? Latent error. The latent belief that there are beliefs. The latent belief that there are illusions. So, the first part is giving us, so to say, more the theory of how ideas resolve the belief in a belief, the belief in illusions. Whereas, so to say, the latent error. The second part shows how ideas resolve concrete error, how ideas operate in the world of matter, in the world of people, in the world of persons, in the world of civilization, in the world of cultures, that it operates right in this world and is able to destroy, so to say, concrete error. In the first part, you have very much the sense that she gives there just the theory why an idea has the power to resolve illusions. Then in the second part, gives us the presentation, how that idea has always, in the world, resolved concrete beliefs, and therefore was the moving factor behind civilization, was the moving factor how to take us out of the caveman consciousness, the Adam story consciousness, out of that to the present consciousness of divine science. Then the third part would show the calculus of idea, how that idea has a calculus of the 4x4. Yes, the introduction to this chapter is quite illuminating in so far as it sets the tone of the chapter. And I just want to read it quickly, what it says, and to catch the tone. It says, in the material world, thought has brought to light with great rapidity many useful wonders. We have seen that in the material world, thinking, thought, the thinking of the scientists, the thinking of the physicists, of the biologists, of the so on, have brought forth many useful wonders. Where have they come from? From the thinkers? And so she goes on and says, with like activity have thoughts, swift pinions been rising towards the realm of the real, of the real. See, that's what she said in creation already, that we can get out of the swaddling clothes of thinking into the realm of the real, into the realm of ideas. To the spiritual cause, now she goes over to signs of being, to the spiritual cause of those lower things, which give impulse to inquiry. She says, look here, what is that that was able to bring forth so many useful wonders, that was able to bring forth higher theories, more practical application of those higher theories? What was the cause that brought forth the unfoldment of philosophy, of science, and of investigation? What was it? Well, it was because thought was rising to the realm of the real. That realm of the real is the true cause, to the true cause of those lower things, of those thinker, of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry, showing that it is not the thinker that has brought forth those wonderful things, but that it is the idea that is the cause that made people think the way they were thinking. That it is ideas that gave to thought higher insight into the material universe and its useful application. Can you see what she does? She lifts out the cause from thought to idea, but says that idea is actually that which precipitated itself on human consciousness and made human consciousness to rise to the realm of ideas. The idea makes the thinker think. That's what she wants to say. That the idea of science brings forth scientists. That the idea of wisdom brings forth the thinker. And so she goes on and says, belief in a material basis from which may be deduced all rationality is slowly yielding, see, the belief that in matter was the cause for higher investigation, for higher thought, is slowly yielding to the idea of what? Of a metaphysical basis, of a basis of idea. Looking away from matter to mind as the source of every effect. Again, the same thing. Looking to mind as the cause, as the origin, as the source of every effect. So that if Einstein sees something new, if Planck has seen something new, if Galilei has seen something new, if Jesus has seen something new, if Mrs. Eddy has seen something new, from where did it come? Not from Einstein, not from Planck, not from Galilei, not from Jesus, not from Mrs. Eddy, from the one mind. Whoever is transparent for that one mind will be used for a higher insight. Everyone. Without exception. There is not enough intelligence in the brain to think above the framework of a brain. The brain can only reproduce within its own domain what it has stored up. That which lifts men out of thinking is the divine mind. The idea operating from mind, as mind, and through mind that is actually lifting up human consciousness. This is really what she wants to show here. Therefore, let's take the first part and your epitomes, which you have written out, the epitomes on the first part, and we can run through them rather quickly because it's very, very simple, very clear, I would say, metaphysically seen. Very clear, very simple. It's so pure here. The first part is written in the 7x7 layout, but we only want to take the 7, not the subtones, but when you read through that first part, which is rather long, don't be sidetracked because it seems that other synonymous terms come in because there are subtones. So if you read along the subject of mind, don't get sidetracked suddenly you feel she speaks about truth and about love and so on, it's just because that would be the subtone. But the main tone of mind is just showing that very thing, that the idea of mind dispels the belief in a material basis. Oh yes, I should have done what I did before, namely, instead of reading what I have here, I should have asked you now, look here, if we would make an exercise together, exercising our seven synonymous terms, we would have said, now let's make an exercise on that very epitome on Christianity as the Christ, which says that an idea has the ability to dispel its counterfeit illusion. So I would have asked, now what would you see in mind? And I think in mind you would have said, all right, then mind would show us that the idea of mind would dispel the belief that there is another basis than mind, namely a matter basis, a material basis, instead of a metaphysical basis. Meaning that the idea of a metaphysical basis dispels the belief, the illusion, in a material basis. Mind is basic. And she does that in a very nice way. You know, this chapter, it's quite hard on me to present this chapter just in a few minutes, because it's so beautifully laid out, so symmetrically laid out, so lawfully laid out, that actually one would have to spend a few days on it, two or three days on it, just to see the exactness, the beauty, the symmetry of this presentation. Just let me show in mind the subtones quickly, just to see the flow. See, just to say, and just reason with me, you don't have that now on your sheet of paper, just reason with me that if this is the fundamental idea here, that the idea mind is the metaphysical basis, and that the metaphysical basis is dissolving the belief in a material basis. See, that would be the main point. Then you could say to yourself, well, that sounds very good, huh? But how does it do it? Huh? The subtones always will answer, how does it happen? Huh? How does it happen? What is the law behind it? How does a metaphysical basis actually dissolve the belief in the material basis? And so for that purpose, she takes the subtones, giving, so to say, a slow motion presentation of this very fact. Huh? Like in a film, when you have a slow motion? Yes, that's the expression. Huh? Where you can see the little steps separately, instead just the whole impression. She would start there for us as a subtone of mind, you see, and would say, all right, you know, mind is a basis. Matter is not the basis. Can you see, first stating the opposites? If one has to resolve the other, she starts out and says, yes, there are two opposites. There is a material basis and there is a metaphysical basis. In the second subtone of spirit, what would she say in the second subtone of spirit? You know it at once. She would say to the one is real and the other is unreal. Or? You see? Because spirit would tell us something about the substance, the reality of it. Then in soul, you can feel it right away what she would have to say in soul. When do you have those two? She would say, one is higher than the other. Huh? Soul is superior. The spiritual will control the material. The metaphysical basis will control the material basis. Yes? Mm-hmm. Then she would go on and say, well, how can they do that if they are two? And principle would say, yes, you know, the one has a divine principle behind itself and the other doesn't have a principle behind itself. Do you see? Then if the one doesn't have a divine principle behind itself, if a material basis doesn't have a divine principle behind itself, and the metaphysical basis has a divine principle behind itself, then life would say, well, then actually only the divine lives and is exalted, rises up, gets into the realm of metaphysics. The other can't get up to the principle, so it cannot live. It does not live. Huh? Then what can you say in truth when you have those two, when you say the one doesn't quite live, and there's no principle behind itself, and the other has a principle behind itself, and therefore is isness. Then you say, well, then it has to disappear. Then truth comes, says, that's why truth brings to disappearance, destroys the opposite. And if you have no more an opposite, you have the tone of love, and the one is all, the other is nothing. Can you see the law? Now this is the law that rules every subtone, that in every subject, the seven subtones. Each subject, whatever we take now, has seven subtones and rules according to this law. Isn't it a terrific law? See, it's the Christ law behind it somehow. Did you see the subtones? We diverge now from the main subject and have to see that if those seven big subjects always show that the one, the idea of a synonymous term, has the power to resolve its counterfeit belief, then you ask, how does it do it? And the subtones tell you the law of Christ, how he does it. The subtones of mind, I recapitulate, just says, there seems to be two bases. One, that is, the spirit comes, one is real, and the other is unreal. Therefore, soul says, that which is real is above that which is unreal, and controls it. On what authority? Principle comes and says, because the one has a divine principle behind itself, the wrong has no divine principle behind itself. Therefore, life comes in and says, therefore, that which has a divine principle behind itself can live. The other cannot live. All right, then what happens? Then if you see that, that is the truth about it, and that destroys the belief. And if it is, duality is destroyed, what is left over? The onlyness, the one, the all-inclusiveness of love, the wrong is obsolete. You always have a concluding tone of love which always says the one is and the other is obsolete. The one is the only, it's the all, and the other is the nothing. Love always has that sense, either all or nothing. Do you see that? Do you see what Mrs. Eddie wrote? Do you see what this is compared with what I quoted you from the critics that says Mrs. Eddie always turns around the same ideas and goes around in circles and circles? Yes, she does, but according to a law, and always, every time, varying according to the tonality. She shows seven times this law of how a fact is resolving its opposite, but every time from another angle, one time from the angle of mind, then from the angle of spirit, then from the angle of soul, and principle, and life, truth, and love. She never repeats herself. If one reads tonality-wise. It's so exquisite, that chapter. Any chapter is exquisite, but this seems to be one of the pearls, it's like a diamond, it just shines, in its great, that white robe, glistering. This is really glistering here. Yeah. Well, let's just run through these seven great tones. Actually, they are now very easy, you see. If we say, how does an idea of mind resolve what? We say, well, the idea of mind, the first main tone, is the idea of a metaphysical basis resolves the belief in a material basis. If you come to spirit, the second big tone, you have again now spirit, therefore we must put in something that has to do with spirit, namely with substance, that the idea of spirit as substance does what? It resolves the belief in substance matter, that matter is substance. So that the idea of spirit, showing the substantiality of spirit, resolves really the belief in a material substance. Soul shows that the idea of soul, which is unlimited, which is never in something, soul that is never limited in something, resolves the belief in limitation. So she gives the whole sense of how the idea of soul, which is limitless, resolves the belief in limitations. If we come to principle, we can see that principle here shows that the idea of principle, which is the only authority, must resolve really the belief in any other authorities. So we have this fourth subject, that's what you have on your epitomes, giving really that wonderful sense that here we have to exchange the belief in other authorities than God to accept the idea of a principle always at work. Then in the subject of life, she takes really the deathlessness of life, the isness of life, the eternality of life, the immortality of life, and shows that the isness of life dispels the belief in death and mortality, the belief in material life or mortality. Can you see? I mean, these subjects are now very easy. Once one has a good insight into the synonymous term, you just more or less can know what she will have to tell us. It's always showing the true idea of the synonymous term resolving its counterfeit belief. If we come to truth, she shows here truth is consciousness, is divine consciousness, that really the idea of truth dispels the belief that man has a mortal consciousness, or that man is really just nothing else but a mortal consciousness. That the divine consciousness is really the only consciousness and dispels the belief that man has a mortal consciousness. Here it is where she says that man is the conscious infinitude of existence. He's the conscious infinitude of existence. Man is not the consciousness of infinitude, how he sees it. He is the consciousness of existence, not of himself. Wonderful sense, you know, that the consciousness of being is really man. That constitutes man. Or in love, that the idea of love dispels the belief that man is separate from God, that man is imperfect, the belief that man is not one with God, apart from God, separate from God, and therefore imperfect. So the idea of love's perfection dispels the belief in man's imperfection. As easy as that. But every time she shows how the dynamics of it. You see, this is like first giving the statement. Here is the idea of mind, and there is the belief in its opposite. A statement. Now the Christ operation, the Christ law operating to bring about the resolving of it, are the subtones. They show you the modus operandi of it, the dynamics of it. And in this way, gives us that beautiful sense of an idea has a Christ. Therefore, an idea is a Christ. What is that idea? We have seen it in creation that we have to father that idea, that we have to sonship that idea, and we have to mother that idea, which means I have to contemplate the idea of mind, and in contemplating the idea of mind, that is resolving the belief. It's not somewhere up in heaven that the idea of mind is resolving a belief. It's based on the chapter on creation, based on me having the idea of fatherhood and sonship and motherhood, and therefore me contemplating this very fact, is resolving it through the subtones, until finally more and more in my own consciousness I have only the ideational universe. Isn't it beautiful? Huh? Terrific. Huh?